pregame show for your day. Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder on News Radio WTAM 1100.
The deal boss, Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News. Wills' Ways to Save is in. We take our skin, I think, for granted when it comes to protection sometimes. Granite's on that topic this morning on your skin. What you got for us?
Absolutely. Well, this is what I call a summer clearance. Your skin looks like it's been through every possible sale. You know what I mean?
Right.
Good analogy?
Right.
Not so much?
Yeah.
Well,
I get
it. Kind of gets that worn out look. It's the clearance bin look at the end of the summer. We age very quickly at the end of the summer. That's thanks to the sun and sunspots. And for those of us heading back to school and stress, a little bit of adult acne, teenage acne, whatever it is, the average cost of taking care of your skin, if you buy any of the top products on infomercials, you're looking generally at about $500 or $600 a year if you do it properly. And let's face it, most of us listening now are not going to pay that.
Right.
So I have the ultimate skin repair kit. I'm not even going to bother saying the name because I'm going to, you know what I'm going to say. It's Purewell. It's the number one top-selling line that you'll see on all the infomercials.
Yeah.
The Purewell skin line, which drops 2 to 3 times a year, is just running some type of summer clearance where you'll get virtually $150 or $200 of skincare products down to well under $75. The nice thing about this works for both men and women, completely natural. We're talking like green tea extract, repair, a lot of the anti-aging ingredients, which you can actually start using at any age, vitamin C, facial serums, revitalizer. It's basically like giving your entire face a day at the spa, but something you could add to your back to school or morning routine. And again, a great way to reverse the hands of time, but also give your skin the lift it needs this time of year. I use it every day. A lot of the people at Channel 3 use this as well. That's our secret.
Great points. No matter your age, getting good habits when it comes to skin care, it'll do you well in the long run. Matt Granite, the deal boss, Channel 3's Morning News, Will's Ways to Save. Watch him on 3 this morning. Back here same time tomorrow with some more great stuff for you, for your face, as a matter of fact. Matt, thanks.
Awesome.
Sports mornings, 15 and 45 past. Mike is in, and our tribe is on a roll.
They're playing good ball, Bill. They really are, despite all the injuries that seem to be piling up. Jose Ramirez got a day off Sunday, and boy, has that paid off.
Now the payoff pitch from Lorenzen to Ramirez. Swung on, hit a ton. Deep right field. There she goes. 8-0 Indians. Jose Ramirez, second night in a row. And he now has a new single season record, 36 home runs, the most ever by an Indian switch hitter. A no doubt about it bomb to right.
He's 6-for-10 since he had that day off, 3-for-5 last night, 2 runs batted in. Indians win it 8-1. They scored 6 in the first 2 innings. And with Kluber on the mound, well, he could pretty much ring that one up for a win. And Corey got his 15th win going 7 innings. Now, story of the day, though, for the tribe, the news about Trevor Bauer headed to the DL with a stress fracture in his right leg after he took that line drive last Saturday. Kluber says,
obviously, it's disappointing. You know, Trevor's been a huge part of this team. And but I think you kind of take the approach that, you know, the 25 guys you have to suit up that day are going to go out there and give it everything they have, and you try to find a way to win each and every day regardless of who may be hurt or who may be unavailable.
Indians have been good at doing that, and they're going to have to continue for a while without Trevor. Now, there is no timetable for his return. Maybe have an update soon, though, as they continue to evaluate him. Series finale in Cincinnati tonight at 7:10. Shane Bieber on the mound for the Tribe. You can hear it right here. Boy, the Browns look like they're itching to play another team. Several fights broke out at yesterday's practice. They'll host the Bills on Friday night. Now, tomorrow, they'll host free agent wide receiver Dez Bryant for a visit, and as Hugh Jackson indicated yesterday, it's a two-way street, not just that Dez wants to be a Brown, but how do the Browns feel about his real interest in playing here? Of note from last night's episode of HBO's Hard Knocks, Hugh and Antonio Callaway had a little, actually they sat down with John Dorsey. That meeting was after Callaway's problem became knowledge to the team. Callaway also apologized to his team, and Hugh said, well, he believes Callaway's side of the story.
I think he's telling me the truth. He knows if he's lying to me, then I'm done.
And that was part of last night's Hard Knocks. We'll have more on that throughout the morning and more on the Browns in just a moment. And coming up at 5:45, Tribe President Chris Antonetti talks about what the key will be for Trevor Bauer to have a speedy return. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio WTAM 1100. Time for a Browns training camp report brought to you by your fantasy football destination, Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings Beer Sports. Browns host the Bills Friday night, preseason game two for starting quarterback Tyrod Taylor. It's a chance to face his former team, but he says it's not going to be about that for him.
This game isn't about them, nor just me or our relationship. It's about us taking another step, getting better. Like I said, it's week two of the preseason. You want to see growth at every position in all phases from the first week. So that's more so what this game is about.
Well, that's true, but anytime a player gets traded like Tyrod did, you know there's a little extra edge for him in that. Browns and Bills, 7:30 kickoff Friday night. With your Browns update, I'm Mike Snyder.
A couple of the news stories today we'll be following for you. Bill Zimfer joins me on News Radio WTAM 1100. Morning, Bill.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. All right. Overseas trade, Turkey first. What's the story there?
Well, this is a situation that has a potential to really cause problems for the United States. We are in the midst of now a trade dispute with Turkey. It's interesting. And the latest development is that Turkey is putting huge tariffs on U.S. imports, $1 billion estimated involved here, involving cars, alcohol, tobacco, and other items. 120% tariff on cars, 140% on alcohol. This after President Trump doubled the tariffs on steel and aluminum coming from Turkey. And in the middle of all this, Bill, is an American pastor, if you can believe it. Andrew Brunson, who is an American evangelical pastor, he is being held under house arrest in Turkey, charged with terrorism, and he is thought to be accused to be part of a coup attempt back in 2016. The United States has demanded his release. Turkey has refused, and now everything's spiraling out of control.
President Trump, I saw him sign this defense spending bill. I thought the noise was he'd never mention McCain, which I think his name was on this, but there's some others that are upset too.
Yeah, that was just the start of it. It's interesting because this defense spending bill is more than just providing a much-needed raise for our people in the military and funding military hardware improvements and things like that. It also includes a lot of other provisions having to do with oversight from Congress and restrictions on U.S. military activities in places like North Korea, Turkey, Yemen, Crimea. So the president, after signing this bill, later in the day, added what's called a signing statement. That is basically the presidential interpretation of the new laws. And the president says about 50 statutes in this bill were unconstitutional intrusions on presidential powers and says he need not adhere to those. So there's some debate about that. In addition, we're getting flack from overseas because some of the restrictions in this bill are directly aimed at China. There is more review involved in foreign investment and foreign purchases in this country, and it cracks down on individual companies like ZTE and other telecommunications firms in China in the name of national security. So we're getting flack from both the White House and from abroad on this.
Bill Zimfer on it this morning. Bill, thanks.
You're welcome, Bill.
A couple other stories. The Manafort trial. This is interesting. Attorneys for Paul Manafort, the former Trump campaign chairman who is on trial for financial crimes in federal district court, Alexandria, Virginia, will not call any witnesses to present a defense. Manafort's attorney says the government did not prove their case. See how that goes. All right. White House noise. Yesterday, President Trump's campaign announced legal action to silence Omarosa Newman as the president himself launched a counterattack on Twitter, calling his former senior advisor, quote, crazed and a crying lowlife. Adding, quote, good work by General Kelly for quickly firing that dog. Omarosa has, of course, been releasing different audio tapes each day since Sunday. Yesterday, said there was a recording of Trump during the Apprentice days using the N-word. His campaign advisors knew about it. Again, via Twitter, the president said the executive producer of The Apprentice, Mark Burnett, assured him there are, quote, no tapes of him using such a terrible and disgusting word. Adding on Twitter, I don't have that word in my vocabulary and never have. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said yesterday in a press briefing she could not offer, quote, a guarantee. The president has never been recorded using the racist term. Also yesterday, Trump basically going after Amorosa and other, and the word dog is being used.
We have a dirty dog like that who's no good, who's a failure. They were fired like dogs.
You got Rubio doing poorly and he sweats like a dog.
I'm watching Marco sweating like a dog. Now Romney choked, okay? He choked like a dog.
He was choking like a dog. Choked like a dog.
Mitt Romney couldn't run for dog catcher.
Hillary Clinton couldn't be elected dog catcher.
I'm watching television and I see her barking like a dog, right? No, she's barking like a dog.
What was that? Is that a dog?
Okay, so yesterday at the White House, Sarah Sanders, Huckabee, the president's spokesperson, was asked about using this dog comment so many times.
This has absolutely nothing to do with race and everything to do with the president calling out someone's lack of integrity.
So we're off and running. Rush Limbaugh will have his take on all this and more following the news at noon, WTAM 1100. You dirty dog, you. Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, joins me this morning. He follows restaurants and beer news and culture and sports. A couple things for us to check out this week. Morning, pal.
Hey, how are you, Bill?
Good. Let's start with a story you posted about Chefs Unbridled, the 40th anniversary of this event. Tell me about it.
You know, I love this. This is a fundraiser. It's actually the 40th anniversary of Fieldstone Farms Therapeutic Riding Center. You know, this is out in Gates Mills. They put this on every year. Chefs Unbridled brings together a ton of local chefs, and they raise money for the Fieldstone Farm efforts. And what they're doing really is helping people through therapy and the horses, everyone from little kids with a variety of disorders and diseases to veterans with various PTSD symptoms. But they're really bringing together an A-list of foodies, and it's held right on the polo field. Demetrius Athenios of Bold Food and Drink is going to be there. Adam Boswick of Pulpetta. The two main guys behind this from the restaurant standpoint are Scott Kuhn and Chris Hodgson of the Driftwood Group. That's Sobreo and Bin 216 and several others. So this is a really neat event. It's going to be held Saturday, September 8th at the Chagrin Valley Hunt Club Polo Field. Really nice effort called Chefs Unbridled.
Good event. Check out some ticket info online. Okay, now we've also got Blues and Brews. Going to change the date in Akron?
Yeah, they moved it up a little bit this year. John Neway has been really the impetus behind this, the catalyst really throughout the 14 years this has been going on. I talked to him recently, and he's amazed that it's been 14 years. This is a big summer beer fest, one of the biggest in Akron. Of course, Thirsty Dog is the largest and oldest brewery in Summit County. This is coming up pretty soon, August 25th. They'll get between 2,000 and 2,500 people. They're still looking for volunteers, too, this year. So if people want to email me, I can point them in the right direction. Really fun event. We're looking at about 60 breweries. More than 40 will be from Ohio. Just a lot of fun. $35 a pop. It's reasonable. Really annual August events. A lot of fun. Winking Lizard and the City of Akron are behind this. So really a lot of fun. It's coinciding this year with the Rubber City Jazz and Blues Festival as well. So John Neway of Thirsty Dog has done a very good job with this, and he's still very much behind it.
Another note here with Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. You got some technology involving Bud Light. Explain this to me.
Yeah, this is a wild one. You know, it's no secret that Budweiser and Bud Light are really into sports marketing and have been for decades. From everything from the Super Bowl to Major League Baseball, international and national events. Well, they're taking that approach to Cleveland. They are going to be positioning 10 Bud Light Browns Victory fridges. These are not small fridges. They are large. They're about 8 feet tall. They have upwards of 216-ounce aluminum bottles of Bud Light throughout Greater Cleveland. Two of the fridges are going to be in Brown Stadium, well, First Energy Stadium. The remainder will be in bars throughout Cuyahoga County, mostly Greater Cleveland. And the way it works is these are going to be locked. They're going to be inside of people. They're going to be locked. But the second the Browns win a game, their first game this year, through a wireless signal, smart technology, the fridges will be unlocked. If you're a lucky enough person to be standing around there at that time, you hoist yourself a celebratory Bud Light. Should be a lot of fun. I mean, they are really having fun with this promotion. I can't wait to see how it plays out. I can't wait to see when it plays out.
Are there different bars with this thing then?
Yeah, good question, Bill, because there are, and the city, there are the Bud Light is being a little coy about exactly where these are going to be. I know that two will be in the stadium. The rest will be in places where you have to be 21, obviously, to be near them when they open. But it should be pretty cool that they're going to be triggered through a wireless signal and opened automatically.
Technology, the Browns, and a beer all together. I just hope they open. If you know what I mean. Good stuff. Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com. Follow him on Twitter, mbona30. Always putting out some good stuff on restaurants and beer and different things. Mark, thanks much.
Thank you, Bill.
It's sad. It's a topic. It seems to attack every family, every zip code in some place, the overdose problem. And there's a fascinating book called Dope Sick. Beth Macy has written it. I said she would join us. She's on the hotline right now. Beth, I appreciate your time, first of all. Thanks much.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be in Ohio again.
This epidemic and the problem it has touched with different families, let's go back and reset some history. And you literally, I think, can draw a line in the 90s and point to the drug, the pharmacy companies. Explain this to me.
Sure. In the mid-90s, there was this new pain is a vital sign movement, and this idea was promoted that was false, that we were under-treating pain. And Purdue Pharma at the time introduced a drug called OxyContin, which was a stronger opioid than had ever been released before. And it was quickly shown to be abused and very addictive, even though the company was allowed by the FDA to say the time-release mechanism that it had was believed to reduce abuse. But, of course, we know that wasn't the case.
You know, I'll use the phrase business model when it comes to medicine. I mean, doctors, physicians, they get a lot of information from the drug reps, no matter the medicine that they're prescribing, right?
Exactly. Well, in this case, Purdue paid 5,000 doctors, nurses, and pharmacists to accept free trips to resorts to become trained speakers for the product, and then they fanned out back to their communities to promote this notion. And sales reps all over the country went to areas where doctors, they bought data showing which doctors were already prescribing other opioids and then sent their reps out to try to pitch the docs to prescribe OxyContin because it was longer lasting, allegedly. And, of course, we know it was much stronger, but users quickly figured out an end run around the time release mechanism to get the full euphoric bump. And we now know that the company knew that pretty early on.
You and I are talking about this crisis in 2018, but take me back 10, 11 years ago. This was in court. I actually forgot about this.
Right. $634 million fine of Purdue for criminally misbranding the drug. Three executives also had misdemeanor charges. No one went to jail. And Rudy Giuliani, who was hired by the company to help sort of thwart the government investigation and make Purdue out to be better guys than the public was beginning to think they were, ended up doing some lobbying and got the government to charge Purdue Frederick, the holding company, not Purdue Pharma. So the drug was still allowed to go on being sold. It actually sold more after the case. And then we know now that the pharmaceutical company spent almost $1 billion on political campaigns and lobbyists. And so the drug wasn't reformulated to be abuse-resistant until 2010, even though in the early years the parents of the overdose dead were begging them to take it off the market till they could make it safer.
Dope Sick is the book, Dealers, Doctors, and the Drug Company That Addicted America. Beth Macy done the research and has written it. You know, OxyContin, as you write, is really the moonshine in rural America. It is touched. I was even thinking, you know, we carry Rush Limbaugh on this station. Rush was hit with this. He had the addiction problem,
yeah.
And that was a big story as well.
That was a big story. But, you know, we now have 2.6 million people with opioid use disorder in this country, and doctors have by and large stopped over-prescribing pills the way they once were. The CDC has new guidelines. And I think the efforts now should be, there's this case in Cleveland that Federal Judge Dan Polster is overseeing against the opioid makers and distributors. And I think the goal now that he has set aside for himself is to see what we can do to make treatment more available, especially in these communities that were so hard hit in the early years, which are just sort of wiped out now, not just by the job loss, but also by addiction. I was interviewing a public defender in Harlan, Kentucky recently, and she said, we've lost so many people that we talk about putting up a memorial wall.
Wow. Hey, talk to me about the frustration, the debate within the medical community. As patients are coming in, a physician knows they're addicted. What are they to do about it?
Well, my belief is that a lot more doctors should become waivered to be experts in addiction and be able to prescribe medication-assisted treatment, which is buprenorphine and methadone, which study after study shows reduces overdose deaths. Many doctors don't want to become waivered. It's a little bit of extra training. I think it's 8 hours. And they don't want to have basically, quote, addicts who can be problematic in their waiting rooms. But look, they helped us get to where we are now. And they need to help us get out of this epidemic. And France, for instance, made it so you didn't have to have special training, just like you don't have to have special training to prescribe opioids to do the medication-assisted treatment. They expanded their doctor capacity by 10 and reduced overdose deaths by 87%. So there's a lot of other countries that have been more progressive, have been tackling this more head-on. And I think doctors need to help us deal with this medical issue that they helped create.
And we as patients, an obligation, I guess, when it comes to what we're being prescribed, understand it. There is a certain stigma in the past when it comes to addictions and all, but, I mean, know exactly what you're being prescribed and what you're taking when it comes to pain.
Absolutely. Yeah. If I could just have just one more takeaway, it's like we all have these leftover opioids from surgeries and whatnot in our medicine cabinets. I heard story after story from grieving mother of my kid started out with this. He stole leftover OxyContin, leftover hydrocodone out of my medicine cabinet or his grandmother's medicine cabinet, and that's how it all got started. And so please, please take your pills that are in your medicine cabinets to those drug take-back days. Some of the pharmacies now will take them back. Please, when your doctor wants to prescribe you, you know, I had outpatient surgery last year, was prescribed 15 oxycodone. I took two, and then I switched to the Tylenol.
Yeah.
And I was fine. But then I had to, you know, I had to responsibly dispose of the remaining 13. Probably I didn't need that many. I mean, I have a surgeon friend who will admit that he prescribes a lot because he doesn't want to be bothered on the weekend if the patient needs more. Well, sorry, I think you need to be bothered on the weekend.
Beth Macy, the book is Dope Sick, fascinating, sad topic, but some fantastic research into the culture and how we're handling and not handling it, and some history as well, and the cases, you say, in federal court here in Cleveland. Beth, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill.
At Greg Stubbin, great follow. Always finding some interesting stories to fill us in on. Morning, Greg.
Hey, good morning.
And this week, our visit, no exception, there is a headline I've seen a couple of places I want you to explain to me. The FBI is warning financial institutions, banks, that their ATMs could be targeted by hacking. What's the story here? Is this around the country, around Ohio, around the world? Well, what's going on?
Well, apparently there is fear of a global ATM hack that will take millions and millions and millions of dollars away from banks. And it's really interesting because if you dig into this, it's pretty common on a small scale for these kinds of what are called ATM cash out heists to occur. I mean, they're occurring all over the country and all over the world all the time. They'll take a few hundred thousand here, a few hundred thousand there, maybe a million here and a million there. What I think makes this event or predicted event so extraordinary is the predicted scale of it. Which is why I think the FBI is notifying all banks, and I assume banks all over the world are being notified. Now, an ATM cash out typically means that a band of thieves have cloned some cards, and in a sort of synchronized effort, they hit ATMs all over and all take cash out. That's where the name comes out, at the same time, so that there's no way you can catch them because it all happens simultaneously. Well, it seems to me that if you're doing this on a global basis, you've now got so many people involved, that's going to be really hard to cover your tracks. And if they can, that's going to be impressive and probably the makings of a really good movie.
I was reading about this last night. There was a bank in Virginia, I guess, 2016, 2017, more than $2 million stolen through the ATMs like you're talking about. I mean, on my card, I think there's a limit like $500 a day as far as me getting money out of my account.
Well, if you have enough cards cloned, you can get to a million pretty fast.
Good point.
You know, it's interesting. I have my own personal experience with this is that years ago my bank was sold to another bank.
Mm-hmm.
And my new bank sent my ATM card to somebody else in another city. I don't know how they got that other person's address. And then the next day they sent him the PIN or her the PIN.
Oh, great.
And my guess is this probably happened with hundreds or even thousands of people. And that may be one of the ways that this happens. You know, thieves will always find a way to crack the system. Sometimes they'll get caught and sometimes they won't. But if this is a new type of hack, it may be that authorities like the FBI may not even understand what they did until they did it, and then they can sort of dissect it.
Fascinating story. Am I responsible if they steal money out of my account, though?
Well, here's the good news. There is a thing called the FDIC, or the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and as long as you don't have more than $250,000 in any insured bank, and the savings and loans have a similar kind of insurance policy, as long as you don't have more than a quarter of a million in any bank, you will be covered. So this is not really our problem. It's really the bank's problem. But if it becomes a big enough problem for the banks, it's going to be a problem for us, too.
Good reminder. I mean, just, you know you've got your card and your password and everything's protected. Just a good reminder for all of us this morning. But several banks evidently have been warned by the FBI to expect something on the horizon. Interesting story. Greg Stebbin, good follow on Twitter, too, at Greg Stebbin. Pal, thanks much. Have a great day.
It's great to be here.
Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Steiner. Joe Roman heads up the Greater Cleveland Partnership and talk about our business. Good to see you, bud. Good morning.
Good morning.
You mentioned to me after here you're going to go over to the big new Amazon deal, right?
Yeah, they're getting close to opening up, and so we're going to get a little tour and also just figure out if there's some more things we can do to help them.
They, I guess, the latest to become a trillion-dollar company as far as value on Wall Street. So they're doing some things right. But you know what? That's a great – just, you know, I don't want to take it for granted. When it comes to industry, jobs, business, it's another great example of the changing economy and how we in this area have been able to attract some of them.
Absolutely. And yes, Amazon, you know, does cause some challenges for other retailers. Mm-hmm. We all know that. That's no secret. But we'd rather have them here than somewhere else because they're going to keep doing that business, and we want to work with them. So we really want to find ways for our existing companies to work even closer with Amazon.
There are more. I found this out the other day. Local retail who's now using Amazon. It's
Absolutely.
Almost like they're driving force sometimes too to sell products.
Absolutely,
so,
you know they're good at what they do. So figure out how they can help your own business.
I want to jump around a little bit with you and talk about business. Let's go to the Bowery Akron. What's up there? Big investment, right?
Yeah, the Bowery is a project in Akron similar to what we have here at the Nine. It's a major mixed-use project in a key area of the city that we think will also leverage other investment. And they were getting close, but they were short a little financing. We were able to bring, through our Cleveland Development Advisors, some additional dollars to the project. And, you know, we think that's a great thing to happen because it's an important part of our region, and obviously Akron does the same for us on other issues. So it's just a great. We didn't have to add any new organizations or anything.
Right.
We were just
right.
able to exist or work through the existing organizations. And I think the Bowery is going to be a great project for Akron. And Akron's starting to see a lot of new development in their downtown.
Good example though of the two cities, if you will, playing off each other.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
When it comes to synergy, I mean, absolutely.
And again, we all do things better than the other ones, we should share more, and we can learn from each other. And this was just a good opportunity for both of us.
Let's get back to Cleveland. I want to ask you about the RTA. The headline recently was they're not going to put a tax on the ballot. A tax means they need more revenue. What this has been talked about a lot, and it's a debate around the country as far as public transportation and how it's paid for. I know you and the GCP are looking at trying to help the RTA when it comes to their business model,
you
will.
Yeah, we are. We're trying to figure out if... you know, bringing some private sector approaches to a public sector entity can help with some efficiencies, which obviously can then go to different places in the organization, different priorities. But you're right. Transit is becoming a bigger part of our communities as more and more, you know, whether we call them millennials, whether mm-hmm. we call them young folks, whether we call them people who just don't want to have two cars anymore.
Right, right.
But the systems were set up many, many generations ago to really get everybody downtown. And that doesn't work as well as it used to. So we need to figure out different kinds of ways to fill what we call job hubs to make sure that we can get people from where they live a Lakewood. You mentioned earlier in the show, I think you guys were talking about how houses are selling in Lakewood.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but if you live in Lakewood and you work in Solon, you got to have a car. Now, we've got to find different ways to get people back and forth because that's where people want to live and that's where people want to work. And there are many examples of that.
Many times, I'm going to mention Chicago to you. Okay. Many times Cleveland has talked about a mini Chicago. I hear that from people who worked or lived in Chicago. They come here, you know, with the lake and the downtown.
Right.
Chicago's culture, the L, the train, that's
absolutely
all you hear about, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, people live 2 hours out of Chicago. But they still work downtown.
They do. You're right. And we do also have to take note, though, that I saw a study a couple weeks ago about Cincinnati was looking at their own transit system, mm-hmm. and they hired a firm to assess how other cities were faring with new transit. And it was interesting because Cleveland was not in their set. They didn't study us. And when we talked to them and said, "Why, you know, we're in your own state,"
right.
"Well, you guys have a train. We don't." Sometimes we forget that we do have some amazing advantages to our transit system here in Cleveland. Why we stopped building trains 40 or 50 years ago, now we did lengthened it to get to the airport.
Right.
We did some other things.
Right.
But we stopped. We became a dominant car town where other cultures did not.
To your point, I was at Shaker Square having lunch with a buddy the day who moved here from New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at Shaker. His wife grew up in this area. But it reminded me, I got out of the car, and right there's the train.
Right.
I mean, and that's right. A great example of you're living in that area, you work downtown, it's no problem at all.
I mean, go to the District of Columbia. You couldn't exist without the metro there.
Yeah. Joe Roman of the partnership, while I got you, let me go out to Hopkins. It continues to be good news. Icelander Air First, I mean, they're seeing this business is working for them, right?
It is working for them, and we're seeing other domestic cities connect more frequently to downtown or to Hopkins. And I think that's just going to continue to grow. I think we're up to about 55 or 56 direct connections. That's down from a little bit over 70 when United had their hub here. So
mm-hmm.
we're getting closer and closer to where we were, but at lower costs because now we have competitive airlines.
I talk to Rick Cini, other people in the air business every week on different topics. He brought up to me about Frontier last week. They've added several routes, San Antonio, a couple different routes to Florida as well.
Exactly. And that serves a great market. And again, we have to increase destination, direct destinations and frequency, and that's what's on our plate.
All right, Joe Roman, Greater Cleveland Partnership. Enjoy your tour out at Amazon.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you. Thank
you.
Cincinnati, Mike and Tom, you know, radio is theater of the mind, which is, I think, why the three of us love this medium. I got to tell you, though, listening to you and Chris Antonetti talking about Bauer, I was cringing. My feeling was, Tom, you were a little as you were hearing this news. What were you picking up last night?
Not good, Bill. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, you know, none of us is doctors, and you know, they still need to get together. And they just got this news themselves, but gosh, you know, when you're talking a fracture, whether it's a fracture or a stress fracture, and obviously a stress fracture is not as bad, but you know, you're running out of time here, and. You know, maybe he's a much quicker healer. The one thing about Trevor we don't know is he's never been hurt. And so you don't know how long this will sideline him. But, you know, it just was kind of shades of last year, isn't it, where you're getting ready to get into the playoffs. You've had a good year, and it's like, gosh, can we get there and have everybody healthy for a change?
So true, Tom. And I think the thing we have learned as well, especially with Andrew Miller, is how important the legs are for a pitcher, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are, and really for a hitter as well. When you think of it, Mike, I mean that's where your power comes from, and so you know, as you heard Chris say, they will you know, put their heads together and try to come up with a number of things for Trevor to, you know, to keep his arm strong. That's the big thing here for me, anyway. In regards to his healing and the time that he is off, that they can somehow come up with something where he's not having to shut his arm down as well, you know, whether it's sitting in a chair and doing something with the weighted balls or whatnot. That's the thing that concerns you more than, in my limited knowledge, that the leg or the ankle area. That's going to heal, but if he's not able to throw in the meantime, and then you're starting over from scratch, well, then it's like spring training. And again, we saw how that impacted the ball club last year with its hitters not getting enough at bats in September, trying to get, you know, Michael Bradley and Lonnie Chisenhall and Jason Kipnis sharp. It just doesn't work. So hopefully there's a way they can come up with something that keeps his arm strong and he's not having to go back to square one whenever this leg heals.
But I did take comfort from your conversation with Chris, though, when you asked point blank, are you worried about losing him for the season? And they do really expect or believe, at least from what they know, that he's going to pitch again this year or have the chance to do that, Tom, right?
Yeah, exactly, Mike. Not many of us wish the season was 7 months long, but now you wish it were.
Right.
Because what are we, guys? We're a little over 6 weeks away.
Yeah.
And, when you start talking about stress fractures, you know, I think all of us normally think 4 to 6 weeks. Well, maybe Trevor is a really quick healer. Maybe it's 3 to 4 weeks. I don't know. But, boy, the less that he is sidelined, obviously, the more time it gives him. Because, you know, here's the other thing, guys. Come September, the minor league teams are done. You know, and that's where the issue came last year with the Indians hitters. Where do you go get at-bats? Because the minor league season is over. So, you know, that's the one negative about September when you're trying to get somebody healthy.
8-1 win last night. Shane Bieber tonight. He was tremendous last Friday against Chicago. 6 2/3, struck out 8, I think?
You know, there's, again, where it comes into play, Bill Tino's adage about when you think you have enough starting pitching, go get more. Remember how every team in baseball wanted Shane Bieber at the trade deadline. If you wanted to go get yourself a blockbuster deal done, you just can't give up starting pitching. And again, you see why.
Tribe and the Reds tonight, 7:10 first pitch. GanleyAuto.com Tribe Insider with Nick Camino at 6. Tom and Rosie with the call at 7:10. Thanks, pal.
Thanks, guys.